Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Svarim Chatter podcast. First of all, everyone can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever. And if you do listen on Apple Podcasts, everyone can please rate and review it. This podcast is being dedicated by the Hecht Kohler family, my cousins, in memory and honor of the yahrzeit of their grandfather and great-grandfather, Rabbi Mordechai Zimmerman, renowned Mayil, Talmud Chacham, Baal Chesed, and man of deep humility. Thank them for that. And I should show much have an aliyah. On this podcast, we'll be with Professor Ephraim Kanner Fogel, who's the E. Billy Ivry University Professor of Jewish History, Literature, and Law at Yeshiva University. It's the second time we're having Professor Kanner Fogel. This podcast will be about Rashi. So with that, thank you, Professor Kanner Fogel, for joining me once again.
It's a pleasure. I mentioned Rabbi Zimmerman was the mile for both of my sons. He's a fine yid, so it's a special, very special person. So it's doubly nice to be here with you. So we want to talk about Rashi, and there are a number of ways to do this. Let me sort of start a narrative, and we can then get down to brass tacks. People assume that Rashi is so unusual, and he was completely unusual, the amount that Rashi wrote, Perush on virtually every Masechta in Shas, a few that are not from Rashi that we have under his name, Yuchasim Elov. We'll talk a little bit about that. But virtually all of Shas, virtually all of Tanakh, right? You know, Rashi famously is Nifter in Bava Basra, and he's Nifter in Eov. He's Nifter in a few places, meaning for whatever reason, we don't have the whole parish. We'll talk a little bit about that. But who can imagine somebody writing all of this material? And I joke sometimes when I give lectures and I say that it's very simple. How did Rashi accomplish all that he accomplished? Obviously, Siyata Dishmai, we'll come back to that too. But the answer is that Rashi wrote with both feet and both hands at the same time. He could write constantly, just around the clock, completely. But the fact is, it is something so unusual, people assume Rashi landed from Shamayim. The fact is, Rashi was born, and we don't know a lot about Rashi's life. We know certain things about it. He was born in northern France, in Troyes or Troyes. That's where he spent most of his life. That's in northeastern France, in what's called the Champagne region of northeastern France. Machloket Hachokrim, whether the wine trade was so good there or not, and whether Rashi was involved in what's called viticulture as a parnasa, very big question. Wine was what they drank in France. They didn't have any water. So it could be that Rashi's involvement with wine was simply that was the mashke, you know, that was Hamar Medina. In any case, very hard to prove what Rashi did for a living. We used to think that Rashi went to Mainz and Worms to learn in the Rhineland, which were the two leading yeshivas in that period. Rashi born in 1040, the Minyanam. Mainz and Worms were the two leading yeshivas in the Rhineland. The Rhineland is not that far from northern France. It's to the east, but it's not that far. People sometimes ask if you had a younger man around the year 1000 when Rashi was born, and you wanted to send to the best yeshiva in the world, where would you send him? So believe it or not, there was no Lakewood then, and there was no Mir Yerushalayim. There were Jews in Eretz Yisrael, but there's no, and there wasn't a yeshiva university, there wasn't a yeshiva from Beit Yitzchak Hanan. So where do you send him? So the answer is, if you had a very smart, a very excellent, a Mitzuyan, where would you send that person? You would send him either to the Yeshivas HaGaonim. Rav HaGaon dies in 1038, Liminyanam. His father, Rav Shrira, dies in 1005, right? So right around then. Where were the Yeshivas Bavel then? They were in Bavel. What we call beautiful downtown Baghdad. That's where both yeshivas, Pum, Badiz, and Surah, both there at that time. They had come together for, you know, the same place for a while already. Or if you didn't want to go there, you would go to the Rhineland in Germany, Mainz and Worms. I wouldn't send my best friends to either of those places, certainly not to beautiful downtown Baghdad. I've been in Mainz and Worms, and they're trying to have a beautiful shul there, a gigantic Orthodox shul that was built for the Jews of Mainz and Worms, except there aren't too many Jews of Mainz and Worms, and certainly not too many from ones. But those are where, that's called Golis, those are where the greatest yeshivas, Rav Shrira and Rav Hai in Bavel, Rashi and his Rebbeim in Mainz and Worms, Rabbeinu Gershom was his Rebbe's Rebbe, and that's where Rashi went to learn. We used to think that Rashi went there, sat there for a long period, you know, he went to Kollel for 40 years, L'chor, it's not so. In fact, as we go further, it seems he actually spent less and less time there. L'chor, how yet the Rashi spent a decade in these two places, probably more Mainz than Worms, but both, maybe even closer to 5 years. So Rashi went from northern France to this great Makom Torah. He then comes back. Whatever his parnasa was, he had to do it. So he comes back to his family. The mazel is that Rashi is back in northern France when the first crusade hits Mainz and Worms. And so he's not affected personally by the first crusade, even though he's certainly aware of it. We'll come back to that. I'll mention something about that in a couple of moments. And he dies in northern France in 1105. Now, as we know, the yeshivas in Mainz and Worms actually came back after the first crusade. But the difference is now you have yeshivas not only in Mainz and Worms, but you have them in northern France. Rashi's grandsons, Rabbeinu Tam, the Rashbam, we'll talk about, his students, his descendants, they open up in northern France. So Rashi basically opens up, not that there was no one there before him, Rabbi Yosef Tovelim was in that area, others, but Rashi basically opens up the whole northern French area moving forward. But he learned in these German yeshivas. So people always want to know, well, did they do Pshat Shal Mikra? And the answer is, and here we've talked about Professor Grossman's very nice work on Rashi. Basically, what people who've studied Rashi carefully, both on Shas and on Tanakh, there were what I'll call precursors of Rashi in both areas. There were Perushim on Shas that were starting to be composed in Mainz especially. And there were Perushim on Mikra, or at least attempts to do Mikra, to do Tanakh, the way Rashi does it. So not to suggest that Rashi was just one of the people, Chas v'Shalom, Rashi was unique, sui generis, but he's a product of his learning. In other words, he went and he learned, and he then developed on his own whatever he developed, but it's not a Brias Yesh Me'ayin. So for example, what we call Perush Rabbeinu Gershom, that we have to about 7 or 8 Masechtas on Shas. Interestingly, Masechtas, in a few cases, we don't have any Rashi on those Masechtas. Very interesting question. So did they write, did Rabbeinu Gershom's Perush go on all Masechtas and it was cut down because of Rashi? Was he sort of filling in or not? Interesting question. We don't have an answer. It may be possible that Rashi's Perush on Shas pushed everything else out. So the only place we really have Perush Rabbeinu Gershom that we have are in those Masechtas, mostly where Rashi isn't. But something very important about Rabbeinu Gershom's Perush. Rabbeinu Gershom died L'minyonim in 1028. Rashi's born in 1140. So Rashi did not learn with Rabbeinu Gershom. He learned with some of his Talmidim in Mainz, especially Rabbi Yaakov ben Yochar, one of Rashi's main Rebbeim and certainly his main Rebbe in Mainz. Perush Mainz is what's called a compilatory Perush. It starts with Rabbeinu Gershom, but it goes through the whole 11th century, because you see there are references to Rabbeinu and Rebbe this. There are references to a bunch of people, not too many, but it's references. So it was done sort of b'chabura b'tzavta through the course of the 11th century. What's the nature of Perush Rabbeinu Gershom? Again, what we might call Perushei Magensa, but not to take any credit away from Rabbeinu Gershom, who was the Rosh Hashiva in his day and trained all these Talmidim, and therefore was Rashi's Rebbe's Rebbe, so there's a connection. The Perush Rabbeinu Gershom is what we like to call paraphrastic. That sounds like a disease. Paraphrastic means you basically say the sugya over in different words. In other words, how do you get somebody to get through a sugya? So one way to do it is to kind of summarize it. Paraphrase is more than summarize. It's really going piece by piece, but it's giving you what the sugya means. That's very good. It's very helpful. Rashi does something very different, however. Rashi clearly wants the person learning the sugya to have a chance to figure out the sugya himself. In other words, not just to give him here's what the sugya means, right? Here's a summary or here's a paraphrase, but here's how you can get through the sugya. Therefore, for example, the fact that Rashi's Diburim HaMatchilim, whatever the plural is, read right into his parish. He reads the Gemara right into his parish. He basically takes you through how to read the Gemara and understand it, right? In good yeshivas, when the Rebbe wants the boys to read Rashi, he doesn't want them to teach it. If you know Rashi, you can read it without teaching it. It basically is the replay. It's the play of the Gemara. Also, Rashi will, for example, give you part of his method. He'll give you things that you need to know later in the sugya. It's hard to show it just generally, but I can diagram it. he'll give you at the beginning of the sugya things you'll need to know later. So when this comes up in the Gemara, he's already introduced it for you. You won't say, what is this? And he won't just summarize it for you. He'll give it to you so that you can learn it. So it's interesting. The thought is that the so-called Perushei Magen, the Rabbeinu Gershom Perushim, are the way they learned in Mainz. Rashi's Perush, will come back to this. It's not clear that this is the way that Rashi gave Shiurim. This is the way he wrote the Perush so people could learn Shas. Not that there's nothing that he said in his Shiur, but it's not about Rashi giving Shiurim. It's about Rashi getting the Lomeid, the Lamdan or the Lomeid, through the Gemara. By the way, and we'll come back to this, not completely unlike what Rashi does in Chumash, right? Pshuto shel Mikra va'agadah miyashevet divrei Mikra. Rashi wants to get you through the psukim, give you the context, give you a basic mahalach, give you ki chazals, you know, delong you, so to speak, favor you a little bit. In Gemara, only more so. And therefore, Rashi's pshat in Gemara, even though Gemara and Chumash in this regard are not the same, and Gemara is more difficult, but there's a certain parity and parallel between what Rashi is doing on Chumash and Tanakh, and what, although Rashi on Nach is different than Rashi on Chumash, he has different names, but and what Rashi is doing in Gemara. I mean, I've said a lot, but we can talk more about that. But again, so I want to say, number one, that Rashi is not completely unconnected to Mainz. He's certainly connected to that yeshiva. They came up with at least an attempt to get through Shas and to write a Perush through Shas. Not that there was nothing there before, but this is already an organized Perush, at least some Masechtas. Rashi, of course, then Siyata Dishmaya, takes it to a whole different level. It's very interesting. There's a sefer called Seder LaDerech. I don't want to take our listeners too far away, but there's a sefer called Seder LaDerech, written in mid-14th century in Spain by someone whose father left northern France when the Jews were expelled there in 1306. His name is Reb Nachum Ibn Zerach. And Reb Nachum Ibn Zerach talks about his father. His father left France, went to Spain. And in his Hakdama, Menachem Ibn Zerach goes through a kind of a history of Teresh Baal Peh. So he says about two people. He says about the Rif, who we'll come back to. Rif and Rashi are roughly contemporary, right? Rashi dies in 1105 in northern France. The Rif dies in 1103 in southern Spain. They don't know each other, but they're contemporary. There's no way that they know each other. And we'll talk about Rashi on the Rif too. But he talks about two people having the Shechina being Shora on them. One is the Rif, Shechina Haisa Shruya Bo, Alav. But about Rashi, he says that Shor Saruach HaKodesh HaRabbeinu Shlomo. He's the first one that I know of to say that Rashi wrote Baruch HaKodesh. What does he mean? Because he says he got both the Rif and Rashi get us through, quote unquote, the entire Gemara. The difference being Rif is a Perush Hilchati, which doesn't cover anything beyond the three, except for Nida and other obviously critical Masechtas in Halacha. It's really a Halachic Perush on Shas. Rashi gets us through Gan Shas. This is what Menachem Ibn Zerach means when he says Ruach HaKodesh, Meint, whatever that means exactly. What he means is, people who can get you through all of Shas like that are in a category of by themselves. And, you know, he sort of ranks them Rashi 1A and Rif 1B, if I can say that, right? Rambam, he says, was very smart and a big tzaddik and a big chassid Mishnah Torah, but he saves that great title for Rashi and the Rif because it is somewhat unbelievable. Okay, so therefore, because Rashi is trying to get the person learning Shas through the Gemara, Rashi has a very focused aim. So for example, if you learn Rashi on Shas, you'll get plenty of yediyas, but I would say carefully, only those yediyas that you need for the sugya here, right? Rashi does not make side comments. He does not make footnotes. By the way, since I'm talking about Breira, let me give you 12 examples. Not how Rashi does it. He gives you what you need for your sugya. May be that for your sugya, you have to know another sugya in order to have the ideas to do it. but he's not worried about the total coverage. That's more the job for Tosfos and for other Rishonim. Again, not because Rashi couldn't or wouldn't, but because he wants to keep you focused. And the other great mile of Rashi is he does all of this so briefly, right? It's unbelievable. As we know, I had a Rebbe in Masifta, who was a very famous Rebbe, very smart, interesting Rebbe, who also was a very big whiz at English. And he came in the first day and he looked at us and he said, "Gentlemen, Rashi is the great apocopator." And we looked at him, we said, we didn't even know he was ill, God forbid. To apocopate means to shorten. So Rashi can say in 2 words what everybody else could say in 23 words. And so that's part of that Shar Salav Ruach HaKodesh al Rashi. And so Rashi is not going to give you side points, number one. Number two, Rashi rarely paskins a sugya based on his perushim. Sometimes he will, but rarely. Again, in yeshivas, they like to say, here's how Rashi paskins, here's how Rashi holds. But you have to be very, very careful, because one of the things that we'll see is that Rashi can seem to hold different ways about the same sugya in different masechtas. In masechta A, when the sugya comes up, he learns it one way. I'll give you an example in a moment, a simple example. And in sugya B, he may learn it a different way. What got into Rashi? In other words, there are what we might call steeras in Rashi. He doesn't mean for them to be steeras. He wants to give you the best local perush. The fact that this sugya in Masechta A will go one way and in Masechta B might go another way, that's because the sugya makes him do it. Whatever leads into the sugya, and this has been shown. This was really shown very nicely. In fact, Professor, it's really Reb Yonah Frankel, Olav HaShalom, who is very famous for his work on Piyutim and Machzorim, did his doctoral dissertation, Darchel Shal Rashi Perushol HaTalmud, right? And he takes up the very interesting question, what do we do with these theories in Rashi, where in Sugya A, Rashi will learn it one way, and in Sugya B, he'll learn it a different way. So some have said, Mahaduras, Rashi did additions. The Chidah says it. If the Chidah says it, I know that our MC is a very, our podmaster is a very big fan of the Chidah. I agree with him. Gadol HaChidah, unbelievable. The Chidah didn't die in 1105, he died in 1806. It's 700 years later. Mi Gadol HaChidah. Chidah talks about Mahaduros. We're not sure what he means because it's very hard to find them. We'll talk about Arvei Pesachim. Very hard to really trace them. So Professor Breuer, Frankel, I should say, doesn't go that way. Others have suggested that Rashi said Shiurim differently. You know, when he said the same Gemara 20 years later, he said it differently, right? So they used to ask Rav Soloveitchik, guys used to come in, guys were with him for 20 years, he'd be learning a Gemara, and they'd say, Rebbe, you said it differently when you learned Gittin 20 years ago. And the Rav would say, I did not, let's get the tapes. I never said it differently, I said it the same. And they would argue with the tapes and they never quite resolved it. Rashi was not giving Shiurim here, meaning, this is not how he gave the shiurim necessarily. This is how he constructed a permanent, most effective perush. So it's doubtful, again, because the whole method was not giving shiurim, doubtful that accounts for the steerers. What the Professor Frankel suggests is what I'm suggesting, following his lead, that the sugyas made him do it. So just to give you one example, after Hanukkah comes Purim soon, we had Asar B'Teves. So, and the question, there's a couple of ways to explain it. Rashi in Pesachim Kuf Ches, Afein Hoyu Boso Anes. Women are obligated in Mikra Megillah, Dalet Kosos, Ner Hanukkah. So Rashi and Rashbam, we'll come back to that Rashbam too, say because women were active, right? There was Esther at Hanukkah time. Dalet Kosos, Noshim Tzidkonios, they had an active role in the Shibud and the Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the woman who Rashbam calls Yehudis, right at the time of Hanukkah, she did the right thing. So because the women were stars, therefore, even though these are mitzvah sasei shazman grama, and called ma'at tikkun rabon and kein d'oraisa tikkun, nonetheless, women are chayavos afein hayubosu anes. Tosfos in Pesachim, Daf Kuf Chesim Beis, and in Megillah Daf Dal, they don't say anything in Shabbos there. They learn, no, Afhein Hoyu, right? Women were also part of the Gezeru. And Haman wanted to kill the Jewish people, he didn't only want to kill the men. When Paro was Meshabed Am Yisrael, so he might have been Meshabed the women differently, but they were also part of the Shibud. And when the Yevonim, the Misyavnim, they were very interested in hurting the women also, you see. So That's what it means, afhein hoyu. That's the way Tosas goes, right? And again, there's different Tosas Megillah. That was last time's podcast. Tosas Megillah goes one way, Tosas Pesachim goes a different way, but they're on the same page. If you look at Megillah Daf Dalet in the Rashi, all of a sudden Rashi says, afhein hoyu boso anes. He gives exactly the perush of Tosas. Not the activist perush, the women were active, but hoyu, they were there, they were part of the Gzeira. One way to explain it, and I think it can be explained if you look carefully at the sugya, is that the sugya somehow, the way it's presented in Megillah Daf Dalet, caused Rashi to explain the Gemara that way. There's another possibility, and we'll come back to this too in a minute, and that is that, quote unquote, Tosfos fell into Rashi, right? Somebody, does Rashi may not have said anything on that Gemara, and somebody put the Tosfos in. I don't mean somebody, somebody said, oh, min bimino, right? Putting a Tosas into a Rashi is not like putting, Tarfas, God forbid, into kosher, right? Again, why would they do that? L'shabeach. And we've talked about that. We will talk about it too, on Rashi on HaTorah. Rashi also, a lot of people wanted to add to Rashi because Rashi was the parish of record. So a lot of people wanted to add to Rashi. So it's covered godel, right? To help Rashi out a little bit. Now, here's the good news, and we'll talk about this now. As many things that fell into Rashi, it's not 20%, it's not 10%, it's not 5%. I don't think. Is it 2%? I don't know. There are a lot of Diburim and Maschilim in Rashi and Shas, thousands. So what's 2%? That's a tremendous number. It's some small percentage. Nobody should lose their faith in the Gemara. Nobody should have a crisis. Uh-oh, Rashi is Nisht Rashi. But there are things that came into Rashi. By the way, anybody learning Gemara Chulin, go to Kuf Tes Zayin Amid Beis in Gemara Chulin, and you'll notice this gigantic Rashi. It's gigantic. It goes the whole Amud Kemat on the Mishnah, on Chelev, HaKorosh Bekeva, Acholav, I should say, HaKorosh Bekeva, milk that's caught in the stomach, when they're like, what's the status, and so on and so forth. That's all mixed in there. The Rashi is humongous. You say, I never saw such a long Rashi in my life. That's because if you read to the end of the Rashi, this you could, if you have a sharf, a bocher, and you want to see if he really knows, why is this unusual Rashi not a problem? Of course, at the end, it says there, Adkan Matsosi, after this longer Rashi, it's Choset Takdim. You'll never find a Rashi like that anywhere. Adkan Matsosi Benimuke Rab Shlomo Rab Meir. Who's Rab Shlomo Rab Meir? Rashi's Einikel, who was named after Rashi, Rabbi Natam's younger brother. So we know he was a big Medakdek, but he also was a big Lamdan. Yeah.
Reminds me of the age-old adage you told in yeshiva. You always have to be scared of the long Rashi and the small Tosfos.
Nachon, right? That's the one with the Bava Kamma. Right, that's right. I was thinking of that, right? So it's not Rashi. So Rashi's Einikel fell into Rashi. Who should fall into Rashi if not his Einikel? Now, how did it fall in? Is it all his lo yodea? But it's not min b'shein omino. It's not a chatzitza, right? So again, This is a challenge with Rashi. As it turns out, our Svarim Chatter Menahel, the Rosh Kol here, just put up on his site, I think today, Rashi on Maseches Sukkah by Aaron Arendt, Dr. Aaron Arendt, whose father, Dr. Moshe Arendt, they're both fine Yidden, was a very important scholar of Rashi al HaTorah, Olav HaShalom, Ayid Tzadik, a French Jew, made Aliyah, fantastic. Anyway, Aaron Arendt did for his doctorate Rashi on Megillah, which he published. He did Rashi on Rosh Hashanah, and now he put out Rashi on Sukkah. What does he do there? So based on the Kisvei Yad, he figures out exactly what's the original Rashi. Now again, it doesn't change every daf, it doesn't change every omud, but it's important to know, right? It's important to have an idea where might there be these interpolations, right? So, but again, so I try to put this together. So Rashi himself, again, come back to our Afein Hoyu Boso Anes. Rashi himself will interpret sugyas differently in different masechtas. You'll tell him he's Soser himself. Rashi will say, it's not that I like steerers more, I like good pshat I like good pshat more. I'll give you what I think the best perush is. The other possibility is that something, so to speak, fell in, but not fell in from some, favor from a yeshiva bacher. Something that came in from Tosfos or something else. I'll give you one more example of that, and this will be another interesting example of Rashi. On Brachas Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, it's a famous discussion of Torah Lishma. What's Torah Lishma? What's Torah Shal Lishma? So Rashi b'milim k'tzarot, a pakapation. Rashi says Torah Lishma lo mein amanas lasos. Great, wonderful definition, right? Rabbi Dr. Lim, Alava Shalom, wrote a whole book on Torah Lishma, gave all the different definitions. Says that Rashi had the functional definition, Lomein Amanas Lasos. That's the definition of Torah Lishma. Good. Then all of a sudden, Rashi says, Aval is Doa Gemara Fakert. In Psachim, it says, and the Gemara there in Brachos continues, that Torah Lishma is Lomein Amanas Lasos. Torah Lishma, terrible, right? Rabbi Yochanan, terrible. Torah Shal Lishma, Noach Lo Shlo Nivra, bad, right? Not good. Rashi in Brachas, in our Masechtas, quotes, but what about the Gemara in Pesachim, Mitoch Shal Lishma, Baal Lishma? And Rashi gives the answer. There are two types of Shal Lishma. Type A, I'm learning for COVID, so that's Mitoch Shal Lishma, Baal Lishma. But if I'm learning Lekanter, with a tough, with a test, if I'm learning to sort of stare somebody else, that's Noach Lo Shlo Nivra. So Rashi asks the stira, resolves the stira, and then he says, and there's a Yerushalmi, which talks about the bad Torah Shlo Lishma. When I was a kid, I looked at that Rashi, I said, something is very wrong here. Why? How often does Rashi compare Sugi A to Sugi B? Answer is slim to none. Number two, how often does Rashi quote Talmud Yerushalmi? Right, the moderator knows, not so often, right? And so what are the chances of these two things being in Rashi's original formulation? And I said in my youth, not so nicely, slim to none. So I taka went, I checked the Kisvayad. At that time, there were two or three Kisvayad Rashi and Brachas. Now we even have one or two more. And sure enough, Rashi ends with definition of Torah Lishma. Right? Lomid Amanas Lasos, period. So what happened here? So you look Tosis on the spot, Tosis asks this theorem, but Tosis on the spot doesn't give the Yerushalmi. Tosis Rabbi Huda Silio on Brachas gives the Yerushalmi. So the Tosis Rabbi Huda Silio on that Daven Brachas, somebody ungestopped it in Tarashi. What onesh should we give him? Limud Torah. I mean, again, it would be nice if he told us, but we won't starbinish from that insert. But that, by the way, somebody wrote very nicely, Rashi only had a small percentage of Yerushalmi, apparently. Yerushalmi wasn't there yet. Somebody named Michael Higger wrote an article in 1925. It's a terrific article still. It's the best article. There's another one. It's not as good, I don't think. Oh, well, say it carefully. Higger says 57 times in Shas, Rashi quotes Yerushalmi. How many Dibri HaMaskel do we say? Thousands? 57 is, nothing. In Brachas, he quotes Yerushalmi four times, so the percentage goes up a little bit, but still, very rare, very rare. It's a second article which says 250 times, but that's sort of based on Diyukim. So Rashi didn't have, it was coming in. Rabbi Shavel, in his edition of Rashi al Torah, has an index of how often does Rashi quote Yerushalmi. So he shows nicely, I think, basically Rashi had five Masechtas of Yerushalmi. That's what he had, his pieces were coming in.
But yeah, quoted so much. So it already by the time Tosfos shortly after they had already the whole thing come out?
Depends where. First of all, again, Rashi dies in 1105. Who's a big quoter of Yerushalmi and Tosfos? Taka Rabbi Yehuda Silion, right? That Tosan Brachas is a good example, right? He dies in 1224 Leminyanim. He dies 115 years after, 120 years after Rashi. 115 years is a long time. Right? So again, that's part of what's hard to remember, even though Rashi and the Baal HaTosfos look like they're arguing face to face, right? There can be a great gap between the Baal HaTosfos who are doing the analysis and Rashi himself. So I'm glad you pointed out. By the way, same thing in Germany. The Yerushalmi really comes in with Rabbi Yoel Halevi, then the Ravia, again, right around the year 1200, around that period. Yeah.
You only want Rashi for sure. Maybe you know of another one that they argued with one. I don't know if we want to call the Rashbam of Ali Tosis, but that Rashbam and Rashi, that back and forth over there in Chumash, is the one where they're like face to face arguing.
Yeah, no, so that's I'll come to that. Let me tell you, that's the one of Vayeshev. We just had it, right? That's the one. He says it's a funny Rashi. He quotes it. I mean, it's a funny, it's an interesting quote. He quotes his Zeta, right? Reb Shlomo, and he says, Reb Shlomo, Avi Imi, my mother's father, right? And it's Rashi's Einikel on the mother's side, right? So if you read it, it says, Avi Imi Meir. His mother's name was Meir. His father's name was Meir. You have to read further. Meir Einei HaGola. In other words, it's acute, right? So Rashbam was about 20 years old when Rashi died. And they talk, had discussions about Pshuto Shel Mikra, right? Pshato Tamid Chadshim B'chol Yom. And again, part of it was that Rashi, Azat Tzadik, he loved when Rashbam said his pshatim. In fact, the Or HaZeruah quotes in one place what's called chiasm on the pasuk, what you have in the Shira, where the psukim repeat themselves. You know, it's how does it go? The psukim, you know, in the poetic style where it says a phrase and repeats, it's called chiasm. He says that's Man Shmuel's perish, right? Rashi loved that. That's Man Einikel's perish. He liked the way Rashbam did it. Rashi didn't mind. Rashbam was a Talmud also, that his Talmidim would look at his Perushim on Tanakh. Rashi fixed his own Perushim on Tanakh. What means fixed? He looked them over. He let the Talmidim look them over. Again, I don't know what the Chidor means exactly. We don't know if Rashi, you know, Rashi had the time to write all the Perushim and to look them all over, but he doesn't tell us which version is which, as far as we know. Talmidim also looked. So apparently the same way you have certain Talmidim where Penkauer, Professor Penkauer, has written beautifully on Tanakh, that there are Talmidim who fix things, you know, with permission. Yosef Kara's involved, there's a Talmud named Yehuda, Yudel, right? Apparently people fixed the Perushim on Shas too a little bit, and Rashi was a tzaddik, he didn't mind. But again, how often does this happen? Not often, but it makes people nervous, but it shouldn't. One other point before I forget. So again, we said already, therefore Rashi doesn't have much room for halacha in Shas either, despite Achronim trying to declare he holds this way, he holds that way. It's good Torah, but it's very, very hard to know. Where do you find Rashi's halacha? So we have from Rashi hundreds of tshuvas. By the way, in one of them, he tells us that he didn't learn Maseches Avodah Zarah back in Yeshiva. That he had to learn on his own. He tells you what the Yeshivish and Maseches. Again, he wasn't there for 20 years. He wasn't there for a whole career. So he mentions in one place on Avodah Zarah, I had to work it mostly myself. I'm paraphrasing. And also what's called the Sifrus de Rashi, the problem with Sifrus de Rashi, like Machzavitri and so on. Sometimes the Rebbe there is Rashi. Sometimes it's Rashi's Rebbe. So it's hard to know. But Rashi's halacha, you have to look elsewhere. You're not going to find. And there, by the way, in Machzor Vitri and in his Tshuvas, you get real halacha. He puts his name on it. Where you can be sure in Machzor Vitri, but in his Tshuvas, but not in his parish on Shas. Okay, so we've covered a lot. Let's see what else we can do over here. Now, by the way, not that there isn't consistency in Rashi. So, you know, the way I'm saying it, Rashi's always giving us surprises. Rashi can be very consistent as well. An example, right? It's a triple crown example. In Maseches Sukkah, right? My mouth is a sugya on Yom HaNeif Kulo Asar, a tough sugya, right? The Yom HaNeif, the Omer is Asar, the first day, right before the Chodosh, it's also completely, I'm sorry, the Omer comes by Tezayin after the first day Yom Tov, right? And when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, you can't eat the Chodosh the whole next day. You can't jump the gun. Why? Shema Yibona Beis HaMikdash. Because we're worried that when the Beis HaMikdash is up, you have to have the Hakrovas HaOmer in order to have the Hakrovas HaKorban in order to be Matir the Chodosh. And right, maybe Beis HaMikdash will be built. When will it be built? Either the first day Yom Tov of Pesach or the night between day one and day two in Eretz Yisrael, right? And you'll think I can eat the Omer like I did last year early in the morning and I really have to wait for the carbon. So therefore I asur it the whole day. So the problem, it's a tough sugya. The problem with it is, how could the Beis HaMikdash be built on the first day Yom Tov of Pesach? How could it be built at night? Beis HaMikdash isn't built at night so much, right? Psukim. How could it be built the first day Yom Tov, right? Shema Yibana Beis HaMikdash. So Rashi there famously says, flying Beis HaMikdash, because the third Beis HaMikdash is not going to be built al yidei b'nei Adam. Third Beis HaMikdash is going to be built. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to send it down from Shamayim. So there's a Ravon, who's a younger contemporary of Rashi in Germany. There's a Yerushalmi that the Magia there quotes, right? The Gemara says, in effect, HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes to keep all the mitzvahs, but sometimes he has to do certain things that are special. But since he's in charge, he can do what he wants. He'll send the Beis HaMikdash down on the first day of Pesach, right? The flying Beis HaMikdash. He says that in Sukkah. He says that in the parallel Sukkah in Rosh Hashanah. By the way, one of the few places where we know Rashi tells us he wrote his parish on Sukkah before he wrote his parish on Rosh Hashanah. Whole other topic I'll get to in a minute. Which Masechta did he write when? And the answer is we don't know. I'll talk about the data in a second. I'll do that separately. So people say, well, Rashi learned this flying Beis HaMikdash parish because it's a tough sugya. The sugya made him do it. So first of all, Rashi on Chumash says, Mikadosh Hashem konenu yodech at the end of Vas Yoshir. Third Beis HaMikdash will be not b'nei Adam, it'll be b'derech neis from Shemayim. Right, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will send it down. Mikadosh Hashem konenu yodecha. He'll build third Beis HaMikdash. But more to the point, Rashi in Yirmiyahu, Perek Lamanav, Pasuk Gimel, Od Evnech v'nevneis b'sul as Yisrael, Rashi says the same perush. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will build the bayish. There's going to be a churban bayish rishon, a churban bayish sheni. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will build the bayish shlishi himself. So anywhere Rashi talks about building Beis HaMikdash, whether it's in Sukkah and Gemara, whether it's Rosh Hashanah Gemara, whether it's on Chumash, whether it's in Navi, and there in Navi, there are six ways to learn that pasuk. Look at the Rishonim, look at the Mefarshim, you have several different choices. Rashi can learn the Perush, Gans find a different Perush in that pasuk. Rashi sticks to his Perush. So, but the point I'm trying to make is somehow miraculously, even though I've said, and I think I'm correct, that Rashi is not always consistent. He will learn sugyas differently in different masechtas. Somehow there are times where he manages to be so unfailingly consistent. It's just remarkable, right? So it's just an interesting kind of a thing. Another type of example in the same way. Rashi in Bava Kamet Sari Aleph talks about the Pasuk Vashem Pokar Es Sora. And he makes the famous Chazal, right? That if you need something, you must pile for somebody else, you'll be answered first, right? Avram Davin Favi Melech, to have go back to having children there. Therefore, Hashem Pakar Es Sara. So Rashi says in the Chumash, Rashi says in the Gemara Bava Kama there. If you look carefully, the Gemara Bava Kama, Rashi gives you much more of the diktuk. He gives you a whole hesber, how this works. Vashem Pakat, it's past tense, past perfect. He gives you a lot more of the nuts and bolts of how this thing works. Doesn't make much sense. You would think he'll give it to you in Chumash where the psukim are found. And the answer, I think, is very simple. There's a whole sefer that correlates Rashi on Chumash with Rashi on Shas. He doesn't always agree either. Sometimes he'll learn the pasuk the way he learns it in Chumash. Sometimes he'll learn it the way the Gemara learns it. Here he learns it the same way. In both cases, he learns based on the Gemara. But Rashi gives you more grammar and more background to the Gemara Bava Kama. Why? So that's the old joke, because Yeshiva Bachram don't learn Chumash so well. No. Pasuk and Chumash, not that you must learn all of Parshas Vayera together, but if you're reading the Pasuk and Chumash, chances are you didn't just plunk in the Chamishi and Parshas Vayera. You know the Avimelech story, you know the Sarah story, you've got some context. And therefore, Rashi doesn't have to spend too much time giving you the whole grammatical buildup. You know that Avram Davin for Avimelech, it says so in the Pesukim before. You know that Sarah now gets pregnant. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised. But if you're learning Gemara, you're learning the Sugya in Bava Kama, you just fell into this whole inyan. So therefore, Rashi will give you more stage direction, will give you a little more running start, because if you're learning the Sugya, you may not be learning the whole Parshas Vayera. You're not learning Chumash now. Or put it that way, you don't even have the Chumash in the end. I started to look back. So Rashi, again, for all that he's not so worried about different Sugyas, he somehow, you know, Derech Neis, he's able, but Derech, not Stam Neis. In other words, it's a Neis, you know, Nibavi Adamash Nibah. Rashi is also able to be very, very, very consistent. Some other interesting things in this regard. We mentioned the order of the Masechtas. Very hard to know. Yes, please.
Before we get to that, I do want to just ask one thing. Do we know We'll talk about the other Masechtas, but do we know if he wrote Tanakh Chumash Pirush before he wrote on the Shas or at the same time?
So that's what I want to talk about.
And then the actual order of the Masechtas as well.
Right. So we don't even really know Gemara versus Chumash. We can chip away a little bit. There are Perushim in Tehillim, which suggest perhaps, there have been diyukim made by all kinds of different Chachomim of different stripes, that there are psukim in Tehillim, where Rashi seems to refer to the events of the First Crusade, you know, to persecution, maybe of the First Crusade. So Vaistais, he wrote his parish on Tehillim late in life, right? First Crusade happened 1096. Rashi's not in Germany, but he knows it's the shot heard around the world. It's called in Northern France the First Crusade. He certainly knows about it, right? Okay, in Kabbalah, he nekabel, no problem. And it makes sense. In other words, he got to late ksuvim later. Maybe that's why he dies in Sefer Eov. In other words, that's what he's got last on the agenda. Ulai, ulai, ulai the Shema. However, when did he write his parish on Chumash relative to the Gemara? No way to know. Interestingly, Dr. Arend tried something in Einfallen. In his addition to Masachas Megillah Rashi, he said, let's try to play the game. Can we decide when Rashi wrote the Perushim to make the Perush to Megillus Esther relative to his Perush on Masechus Megillah? Let's see. You know, it's similar in Yonim. Quite correctly, he couldn't make the call. Very hard to tell. Now, the reason I'm picking up Chumash and Megillus Esther, Vaistois, he wrote Chumash and, you know, Chamesh Megillot and things like that more quickly. Right. In other words, he worked on what you'll call the harder Svarim, the Nevi'im Achronim, the Ksuvim and so on, minus the Megillahs, maybe worked on later. But we really don't have much of a clue. People have tried it. And it's even Chumash to Gemara. See, in the Ramban's case, the Ramban, it's very clear the Ramban wrote on Shas first. Right. Maybe he went back to it, but he wrote first, right? He says the Muhammad, he says he finished, he was like 18 or something. But he says in one place, I think in a tshuva, by 30 he was finished with Shas. I mean, he tells us things. Rashi doesn't tell us any of this. We don't know. And Chumash Dafka might have been later for Ramban because there's a lot of sod there. He finished it in Eretz Yisrael. So maybe there was an early version, but you can get some idea. For Rashi, we really don't know. Very hard to tell. Even Tanakh versus Gemara, although, as I say, maybe you could break up Chumash, you know, the things that the Olam needed, Chumash, or that the Olam was more familiar with, Chumash, Megillot, earlier, what I'll call harder parts of Nevi'im Achronim later, because Rashi is also even more brief there. And it's almost like he's not rushing, but he's just trying to, it's a tremendous amount of material to go through. It's things that people don't know so well. On Shas, And correlation between Shas and Tanakh is hard. Shas itself, Povisham, he'll tell you. In Masechus Rosh Hashanah, he'll say, the way I explained it, Masechus Sukkah, so you know he did Sukkah before Rosh Hashanah, which makes sense. But again, very difficult. So there's a Machloket HaChokrim. Professor Frankel had a Svara to try to determine, and Professor Shama Friedman had a different Svara. Both Svaras sound good. I'll tell them to you. And then I'll tell you with a crash, God forbid. Professor Frankel says, Perush Mivushal, right? Again, you have to be alarmed to do this. And he was alarmed in it. It's subjective, right? The better cooked, so to speak, the Perush, the later it is, right? In other words, some Perushim, you have a sense, right, that they seem to have been done over a longer period of time. They're more involved, I feel. Okay, however you determine that. So Kefi HaBishul, Bishul in modern Hebrew means, you know, it's been gekocht. It's been worked on. It doesn't mean it was literally cooked. It's not, you know, cooked up in English is not such a good word, right? Cook the books, that's not what we're doing. So that was his svara. Professor Friedman's svara is also very interesting. It's very logical. He says Rashi quotes his Rebbeim, right? He quotes Rabbi Yaakov ben Yochar, that's his main Rebbe, Mori. He also quotes Rabbeinu Halevi, that's Rabbi Yitzchak Halevi, his main Rebbe in Worms, right? Quotes his Rebbeim. It's a third sort of Rebbe Chover, that's Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yehuda, was a very interesting person in Mainz. Okay. So says Friedman, we'll see how Kafuf, how tied Rashi is to his Rebbeim, or his main Rebbe Yaakov ben Yochar. In those Masechtas where Rashi never disagrees with his Rebbe, that must mean it was an early Masechta. You know, he was just starting out. So he was saying over to Rosh Shiva Shurim a little bit, you know, as if his Rebbe gave a shita, that's it, not moving. There are then places where Rashi disagrees with Rebbe Ben Yorkers. It says, you know, my Rebbe said this, but I say different derech. So the problem is, in Maseches Bava Kama, the two theories have what I call, you know, again, little whatever, to not drachim. They have a little bit of a crash, God forbid. Frankl regards Bava Kama as Perush Ma'od Mivushal. Bava Kama is a very well-developed Perush. It was late in his career. Right? And Friedman says, oh, Bava Kama is one of those Masechtas where he never disagrees with Rabbi Yaakov Ben Yochanan. It's very early. Meaning, you know, I don't know what Rashi Yeshiva say. We have to ask Gedolim. You know, I don't know. I never asked the Gadol this question. It's a little bit chutzpahdik. You know what? Which one did Rashi do first? Vesechnet. Very, very hard to tell. But again, part of it is, and that's maybe where the Chidah is coming from. It almost seems like Rashi's doing this all at the same time. Obviously, not literally, but it's hafochba v'hafochba. So it's a very, let's put it this way, it's a very thankless task. If anybody has a good idea out there, I'll be happy to hear it. But it's a very serious question to which I don't really, I mean, and again, even the Chokrim who know Rashi, they've studied it very carefully. They don't have such a clear answer at all. Very, very, very hard to know. I don't mean to, you know, to punt, but it's very, very hard to know. Yeah. And
so this is tied to what we said before, which is, did Rashi write different maduras, like you said? And also, did Rashi, or was there's the Mahalak, I think, that hold that Rashi, you know, he was editing, he was being Magia to Pirish, and we
constantly right. Working on it. I don't want to say on Astaris Lashem Elokeinu, but on Astaris Lashem, very hard. Because again, there's just so much going on. It's extreme, except what he tells you literally, it's very hard to tell, right? And then you have again the steerers, which Rashi planned. These are not, you know, unintentional whoops. This is quite intentional. Okay. Now, so let's try. Yeah, I have a few more things, but tell me what you want to ask. Go ahead.
So go. I was going to get to, maybe you'll get to this shortly, which is the Rashi in our printed Shas. We'll talk about it, the history of Rashi got in there, but some of the Masechtas is not Rashi, contrary to popular belief.
Correct. So that, I want to talk.
Right. That gets into the Maduras, because some of them, totally, you learn the Masechta, you know, here he is, right. And you're like, this does not sound right. Like Rashi. What is going on here?
So there are famous Masechtas where I would say Kuli Amalo Pligi, what we have in the Rashi spot is Miyuchas LaRashi. Right? Nidorim Nazir. So Rav Soloveitchik once said that he learned Nidorim with his father, Rav Misha Soloveitchik. And because Rashi isn't Rashi, Rashi and Nidorim is very hard to work with. He says, it's very, of course it's correct. The Tosis on Nidorim, this Tosis to Nidorim, that has to play the job of Rashi, because Rashi doesn't do Rashi. So then he says, so they got somewhere, says, but then who plays the job of Tosfos? So he said, my father and I figured out that's the Ron. Everything got pushed out one more step. So Taka, Nidorim Nazir. And by the way, I can't prove to you, I mean, the Achronim talk about it, and meaning it's just not his style. But here's an interesting thing in Nazir. Go to Nazir Davdalam and Aleph and look in the Miuchas Larashi to Nazir Davdalam and Aleph. Kedusha Vavdalta, Mashiach, Mushbavomid Mahar Sinaiu. Rashi quotes the Andav Dalid. There's an Im Tomar. Is Do Gemara Fakert? I think he goes to Nidorim Nazir Samech Tes or Nidorim Samech Tes. He goes to a different Gemara in the same area and he gives a Teretz. In other words, again, there's an Im Tomar Yesh Lomo, which Rashi never does. So it's clear that it's not Rashi. Who might it be? It might be Rashbam Rabbeinu Tam's father, Reb Meir learned in Worms. In Worms, they started to do this dialectic a little bit early. Only no, it's somebody in his Russia. It's always going to be some Karov, but we don't know who. Right? Now, why this happened, if there are Maduras, again, meaning that you know, 90, I don't know how many percent, but 90-something percent of what Rashi wrote survived. That's an unbelievable percentage, right? In other words, we have no, right, no Shas was ever published without Rashi, right? So you know, if you count up all the Masechtas we don't have Rashi on, or it's Meyuchas, right? Rashi on Tanis is an interesting question. There's some very interesting Masechtas in this regard, right? Nedarim Nazir, it seems that, again, people have suggested maybe because they didn't want to learn those Masechtas publicly, so somehow the Rashi got sidetracked. Very interesting theory, again, hard to prove it, but in Kabbalah in the Kabel. But again, as the case of Nazir indicates, if it's not Rashi, it's not some zero. It's just something else. There is, by the way, wait, I lost my picture here for a second.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so as I started to say, where it's not Rashi, and there's a fill-in, you know, it's Meyuchas, it's not somebody who dropped in from China. It's somebody, his either a son-in-law, a grandson, we'll talk about Rashbam in a moment. Also, as you, I'm sure you know, we have Perushim on several Masechtas from the Rivon, from Rashi's other son-in-law, not the father of Rashbam, Rabbeinu Tam, but Rabbi Yehuda Reb Nosson. We have on Yevamos, we have on Ksubos, we have mostly in Noshim, but others. There's more to do there. There's more Kisfayad there. And that's Rivon might be a first step to Tosfos. It's Rashi with a first step to Tosfos. Again, does he have a role in some of these? So a choker, a very choshev choker, named Yudnun Epstein suggested that Rivon may be the one who filled in a number of these missing Masechtas, whether Nedarim or some of these others. So the good news is it's not, God forbid, you know, coming from some foreign territory. It's some kind of family member. But, and why it didn't make it again, you know, that's the same thing with the Perush Rabbeinu Gershom, with several Masechtas, where there's no Rashi, we have the Rabbeinu Gershom. Interestingly, by the way, there might have been other Perushim being written at this time, but they were all forgotten. This same Dr. Arend has a very fascinating article. He says that he found in the Cairo Geniza a few Perushim to Masechtas, I think the Magen Avraham says Beitz, it's Machlokes Achronim, but I say Rav Shechter says Beitz, I say Beitz. I think Kufayin Vav, I remember Aruch Chaim. Anyway, because it says Ein Rovetz Al Afrochem Al Beitzim, and many yeshivas, they don't say it. But anyway, we say it based on that pasuk of the Magen Avraham. The Rashi, something, a perush on that Masech, a perush on other Masechtas, landed up in the Cairo Geniza. Why?
First of all, you mentioned the Rivon. The Rivon finished Makis, where Rashi died in the middle, evidently.
Correct. Yeah, he's one of the finishers of Makis.
Another sefer to talk about, one that I used, when I was a very enjoyable sefer, was the Pirush Rabbeinu Yakim that was published on Yuma. It was only Havan on Yuma.
Yeah, so that's from Rashi's Tkufa. That's correct. That's from the very good. Also, by the way, Germans. It's interesting. The filliners were Germans because, again, Mainz and Worms is where they're working on these Gemaras. Rashi's in France. They're all still in their heim. They're all still over there in Germany, and it comes back. So that's on a number of Masechtas like that. So you have the Rivon, you have maybe Reb Meir on Maseches Nazir, and you certainly have, and maybe you have Rabbeinu Gershom, that Perush Mainz. So I started to mention the Cairo Geniza. You have several Rashi-like kind of Perushim from Ashkenaz that fell into the Cairo Geniza. What are they doing there? So Dr. Arend hypothesized, I don't think it's a bad hypothesis, is basically once Rashi showed up, most of the other Perushim that they had, they could trade. They could ship them out. In other words, basically, Ashkenaz said, Rashi is here. Lo tzarich. We'll send it to you in Mitzrayim. Again, can't prove it, but that's the point. Once Rashi comes in, everything else goes to ground. Po v'sham, these things pop up. Of course, most famously, right, Rashi's most famous substitute is Rashbam to Bava Basra from Daf Chof Tes. Rashbam is the one who made Bava Basra long, right? I know it's a Masoras Chazal, right? 176, but Rashbam is much longer than Rashi, right? You know, it goes 176 blot. It's mostly Rashbam who helped, right? That's the printer, that's Rashbam. And to the 10th parak of Psachim, to Arve Psachim. So Arve Psachim, interestingly, some say that Rashi there is the Mahadura Kama because it's shorter and Rashbam is sort of filling it out. Interestingly, by the way, Rashbam in a couple of places there quotes Moreinu Halevi, that's Rashi's Rebbe, and Vorms to his father's Rebbe, that's Yitzchak Halevi. So there's a family connection that continues there. So there's a suggestion that's a Mahadura Kama of Rashi that Rashbam is sort of filling in. Interestingly, there's a Tosfos The Mordechai quotes a Tosas, the Tosas Rabbeinu Peretz. He quotes Perush HaKuntrus. Does that match the Rashi? Doesn't it match the Rashi? Oh, yeah. So there are these Svarim that try to solve this problem. Again, a hard problem to solve. Rashbam on Bava Basra is very interesting. And we'll say a few words about Rashbam, and then I can almost slide in here and you can ask me more questions to just round out the discussion. Rashbam, Rashi's oldest grandson, at least the oldest from that son, right? Rabbi Tom's older brother from that son-in-law from the mayor. Rashbam really wrote three different types of Perushim. Right? I said before, it's my opinion, right? That Rashi on Shas and Rashi in Chumash, the Pshat of Rashi on Chumash and the Pshat of Rashi on Shas, obviously Chumash and Shas are different, but Rashi is fairly consistent in his method. You know, I can see a certain parallel. Rashbam writes three things, not that they're contradictory, but three very different chiburim. We have from Rashbam, is quoted in Tosfos not a little, right? Pirush Rabbeinu Shmuel and so on. His brother Rabbeinu Tam is one of the first Balei Tosfos. You know, he's the most famous early one. Rashbam is in Tosfos all over the place, right? We then have from Rashbam a Pirush on Chumash, Omek Pshuto Shel Mikra that we talked about before. We discussed with Rashi his method, right? A stricter, a deeper pshat than Rashi, less medrashim, so to speak. And then we have Rashbam filling in for Rashi. These are three different, very different operations, right? Omek Pshuto Shel Mikra is schlep everything out of the Pesukim. Don't read anything in, right? Rashi, Tosfos is bring everything together. And Rashbam on Bava Basra is kind of in the middle. Give me a Perush, but Rashbam on Bava Basra plays a little bit like a Baal HaTosfos too. It's a kind of a mixture. So Rashbam was able to do three really different things. And here's where it gets even more serious. There are psukim in Bava Basra that Rashbam learns according to Chazal, and he says, Mi Yitura Dekra, right? For the extra Vav, the extra Yud, the extra letter, I'll learn this Drashas Chazal. In Tanakh, he says, Omek Pshuto Shel Mikra, and he'll disagree with himself, and he'll have no problem. So that's what the Rav used to say, Shtob Nitzan Akasha, but here's the point. Multiple truth theory. In other words, the Rashbam said, when I'm doing Chumash, I'm doing Chumash. When I'm doing Gemara, I'm doing Gemara. When I'm doing Gemara for Rashi, I'm doing that. When I'm doing Tos, I'm doing something else. And there's no stira. They have to be brought together. We'll figure it out. Yeah.
And yeshiva, it always came across to me, I think to a lot of people, is that when you learn Bava Basra and you go from Rashi to Rashbam, and in general learn Rashbam, and you see how excessively long he is, you see how, like you said, how amazing Rashi was. I don't know what that word is, but you see how makatzer he was. Now, also interestingly, Masada Rav Kook published, I was talking about this, maybe it's not around, Pirush Rashbam HaKotzer. I don't know how you can have HaKotzer. And then they also have something in there on Chesabatim, and they have on I think Yesh Neichlin, Rashbam HaMakayri, very little. What's the deal with that, Sefer?
So again, they were trying to figure out where is Rashbam playing Rashi and what did he add? But I don't know if you can do that. In other words, they're trying to figure out, you know, sort of if Rashbam were Rashi, what wouldn't he say? Because I'll give you an example. Let me give you an example. This is just a very good example. Take Rashbam and Bava Basra Kuf Lamed Amid Beis. Right, Ein lemeidim halacha mipi Mishnah, lemeidim halacha mipi Talmud. Rashbam has, if I may say, a tour de force. How the Talmud Bavli is ready to paskin halacha. The Amoroyim are the ultimate arbiters of halacha. I don't mean more than the Tanoim, but what the Amoroyim did with the Tanoim, that's the Mokar and halacha. Rashbam goes on. It's great. Every yeshiva kid should learn that when he's 10. How Shas works as a source of halacha. It goes on for lines and lines and lines. Rashi, and he goes to Gemara, Sof Hora, Ravina Ravashi, Sof Hora, the Gemara and Bava Metzia. He puts it all together for you. There's a Rimi Gash there. The Rashbam, in my opinion, is even more complete. It's unbelievable. Rashi would never do that. Rashi wouldn't stop. So that's Rashbam. I give you what the Gemara means here, and I give you a larger Shas context. Not quite like Tosfos Labain Kol Shura. What is this line? How does this line match with that line? But it's a complete analysis. That's what Rashbam is doing. So it's Rashi. It's Rashi if he were an early Baal HaTosfos. By the way, there's a Gemara in Ksubas Nun Zayin. Rashi has a very interesting, I call it a digression, but it's part of the sugya. When the Chusei came and quoted Rabbi Yochanan, and Ravina said this way, and Rav Dimi said this way, and Ravin said that way. You know, Rabbi Yochanan said Potter, Rabbi Yochanan said Chayev. Is that Eilu Veilu Divrei Elokim Chayev? You know, is that where it's they got the halacha differently from the Rebbe? Right? Interesting discussion. That's the most Rashi will give you, and that's because the sugya there makes him do it. Rashbam gives you tremendous yedias on the sugya, right? It's not exactly Tosfos, and it's certainly not exactly Rashi, and that's what creates all these arichasin, and that's what I think these editions are trying to sort of ferret out. You know, we'll cut down, and we'll try to give you the garin of the Rashbam as if he's playing Rashi. But again, so Rashi never had that problem. Rashi on Chumash, Rashi on Shas, even if he learns a pasuk differently, you see where he's coming from in both cases. Rashbam really, not that he contradicts himself, but if I'm learning it like Chazal from an extra letter, and I'm learning Omer Pshuto Shomikra based on the grammar, how do I resolve it? The answer is Rashbam, Eilu Ve'Eilu, right? The multiple truth theory in the best sense. Right? I've written a little bit about this. It's very, very interesting. So that's really where Rashbam is, you know, is different, very different than Rashi. He's got a lot of things going on, more things in that respect. You know, Memtes Panim LaTorah for the Rashbam. I can learn it this way. I can learn it that way. Whereas Rashi, again, for all his changes, and I don't mean stirot, Rashi's method is very even. And that's, I think, part of the success, right? Look, we have how many manuscripts of Rashi on Chumash? Hundreds. How many Rashbams? 1.5. Not that it's not good, but 1.5. Svarim on Tanakh that Rashbam wrote that we don't even have. Svarim where we're not sure if it's Rashbam. Whereas Rashi is just the favorite. And part of this favorite is Rashi always sounds like he's in control. Not that Rashbam isn't in control, but it's a different type of, you know, it's a less fraught. Rashi wants the reader to be happy while he's learning. It's a very interesting approach. Two more quick things about Rashi, and then you'll ask me whatever else you want to ask me. First of all, Rashi on the riff, I think some of your listeners asked about.
Jump in before we get there. I just want to, when we finish up please, the Masechta thing. So there's a list in Avram Grossman's excellent Chacham Tzarfas HaRishayim,
right,
on page like 216, 217, he goes through the Masechta. So I don't know if we talked about, I mean, he gives a whole list of
right, all, right, what we have, what we don't have, right.
So two things, right. He talks about Tainis and Moed Katan, which Cooper published. And then Also, he lists here a couple of Masechtas in Kutchim that the Bitzal Ashkenazi said parts of it isn't Rashi, maybe. Just talk a little bit about those, maybe.
Right. So that's where Rabbeinu Gershom comes in, right? In other words, on most of the Masechtas in Kutchim, we have issues with Rashi. That's where we have Rabbeinu Gershom, right? What's on the list there? Me'ila, what's on the list there?
Right, Zvachim, parts of Zvachim and Nachas is Me'ila.
Right. Before Me'ila, you said Zvachim and Nachas?
Bechoris,
right. So that's where Rabbeinu Gershom and Bechoris and so on, right? We have Rabbeinu Gershom and a couple of these things. So again, the question is, you know, obviously, as Shas goes, Kutchim is quote unquote the end of Shas. It's also the harder part of Shas, if you will, or the hardest part. So again, I have no evidence for this. Moshlamah Dover Dome, Kutchim is to Gemara what Neviim Achronim are to Tanakh. In other words, these are very long pieces that people don't know as well. Obviously, to interpret Zvachim and Menachos requires tremendous effort. And so it could be that these are the ones that Rashi just simply wasn't able to finish, right? Tainis is an interesting case. Tainis is just, it's a machlokas achronim, how much is or isn't Rashi, and there might be pieces there that are. But again, overall, how many masechtas did he have, Grossman? About 7 that Rashi didn't do? There's Nedarim, what's the list there? Nedarim, Nazir? It's not a big list.
No, Tainis, Nedarim, Nazir, parts of Abastra, Makis. And then he says,
but just the very end of Marcus, right? The very
end of Marcus. He says, Horius is Purushim
again. Right. Again, Horius is also not a usual. So, right? So, all the main Masechtas, again, I don't want to say this in a you know, secular way, but that's the point. Get lost. You know, in other words, sometimes, you know, it could have fallen out somewhere, right? And then somebody put in.
What's interesting is Ma'ed Katan is not, but we have now it's published. So he actually talks about, you didn't address this, what happened to the Masechtas we don't have? Did Rashi not write or got lost? So he says, you would, that's not possible, it got lost, but you see from Ma'ed Katan, maybe it did.
It's so that's the question. You know, in other words, did he not write it or did it get lost? The answer is probably yes. In other words, that's also my favorite.
The famous Yeshiva Bacher Tumel, right? Kan Meis Rashi or Ad Kan Pirush Rashi?
So right, that's right. By the way, for whatever it's worth, right? Machlokas Sefer Chassidim and the Chassam Sofer, whether to give Shurim on Moed Katan because of the Avelis. Right? The Chassam Sofer, who gave Shurim on everything under the sun, said, you know, that's not for public Shurim. And Sefer Chassidim says Meis Mitzvah. People need to know those halachas, give shiurim. So again, it's just interesting. It's not Nedarim, as I say. Is it because maybe Nedarim, they didn't want to give in the yeshivas, they didn't learn Nedarim because they didn't want to have too much public awareness because, again, they wanted to leave it for the chachamim. So I hate to not give answers, but it's very hard to answer these questions, right? And it's interesting. But again, if you look at the total of what we don't have is pales in terms of what we do have, not just in terms of the total number of pages, but in terms of the masechtas. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, he has interesting. There's also this famous. What's the story with the Rashi in Beitz and Daf Chof Dalet with Gam?
Yeah, Ish Romi. Rav Klonim was Ish Romi. Yeah.
What's the story there?
Yeah. So basically, this figure showed up from Rome. He showed up in the Rhineland. He showed up, I think, in Worms. I have to check if he showed up in Mainz of Worms. He showed up. So first of all, anybody who's a colonimus, right? Anybody who's a colonimus is welcome. And he showed up in the middle and they quizzed him. I think he showed up in Worms, but I have to check that on Daf Chof Dalet. Yeah. So he showed up and, you know, colonimus Torah was always accepted, right?
So that's Gurmaizi, right? That's Worms, no?
Gurmaizer or Mainz? Which one did it say?
Gurmaizia, Worms.
Yeah, that's Worms, right? I thought it was Worms. Okay, good. Yeah, so that shows up there. Couple of quick things, and then we'll try to put it together. First of all, just I want to say a word about Rashi's quote-unquote curiosity as follows. Somebody once came to me many years ago, a doctor who does very good, he learns Alamdin, and he does very good research about Jewish medicine and so on. And he came to me and he said that he studied, he was an emergency room doctor, so he really knew this stuff. He came and he said that he studied Rashi's anatomy, the anatomy of the human body according to Rashi, a frum fellow. And he said, Landon, and he said, it's not like Galen's anatomy, not like the Greek anatomy, not like the Muslim anatomy. Rashi got a conception of the human body in terms of the bones, and he managed, that's not like anybody else. How could it be? So I said, because Rashi didn't read Galen and Rashi didn't read Muslim works. Rashi went through Shas and he literally built it, al pi ha-gemaris. But that's Rashi's curiosity. Rashi has zitzfleish for these kinds of things. Somebody wrote a wonderful book in English that was republished, a fellow Ezra Shereshevsky, Rashi, the man in his world. It sounds like some kind of a simple book, and it is simple. He basically shows when Rashi talks about blacksmiths, he says, Rashi vased ganz gut how a blacksmith operates. And he was curious. In other words, here's how the thing gets put on the horse's foot, and here's how they heat it. In other words, Rashi had a very good awareness, by the way, and not because Rashi went to autopsies. That's not how he learned it. He learned it from the Gemaras. But Rashi was able, hafach b'avach the kulaba, but there's a certain curiosity. Rashi, again, wants to give you as much, you're not going to stop give you scientific facts, but he's going to give you whatever you need to learn the sugya, including all kinds of anatomical information, all kinds of physical information. That's how you explain these things. He didn't take courses, he didn't go online. He learned the Gemaras and he was able to figure out, and that's something which again comes through the sakranut, this curiosity of Rashi, is also something that's just worth mentioning. It's really, and it's unique, right? It's really unique, especially since Rashi was not, you know, heir to a philosophical tradition or to a scientific tradition. He wasn't an Aristotelian. He wasn't aware of science, of technical science. He just kind of, you know, the same way that Rashi and Diktuk created a Diktuk. It's not exactly, it's Menachem and Dunash. It's not exactly a three-letter root. He's got his own system and he worked it out. So that's part of his, also part of, you know, Chochma Bagoyim Tam, part of his goddess. Rashi on the Rif, let me say a word, yes, and then we'll figure out what else we should talk about. Rashi on the Rif, Rashi, I want to say this very carefully, Rashi himself never wrote on the Rif. Mainly because, right, whenever the Rif finished his work, Rashi didn't have it. Did he know who the Rif was? Maybe, but I'm not even sure about that. What happened here? So the Rif, and the Tzedel HaDerech talks about this in his Hagdama, as do many other people. The Rif, especially in southern France and Provence and Spain and other places, became Shas Katan, became the Talmud Katan. And especially because it was halacha based, there were some who said, you know, it's hard to learn Kachim, right? Not a briska kol, hard to learn Kachim. We'll do the three Siddur, right? So the Rif became a kind of a mini Shas. Because the Rif became a mini Shas, if I have a bit, and it's not such a mini Shas, it's a pretty big mini Shas. Who do I get to explain Shas? Rashi. So somebody took pieces of Rashi and added and grafted, right? How do we know this? First of all, there's material in Rashi, the Rif, that's from the late 13th century. There's pieces that are found that seem to come, if not from Sefer Mordechai, which is late 13th century, from sources that the Mordechai had. Second of all, a very interesting example, Rashi on Shas very rarely doesn't always interpret the Mishnah, right? What's Rashi's favorite parish on the Mishnah? Get the Mefarish B'Gemara. He'll do it when you get into the Sugya, because he wants you to do the Sugyas. So if I have Rashi on the Rif, and the Rif talks about the Mishnah, if I have Rashi on the Rif to the Mishnah, where'd they get it from? Rashi didn't write on the Mishnah too much. The answer is Rabbi Yonasan HaKohen Lunel, late 12th century Provence, Lunel, right? He wrote a beautiful parish on Shas. We're getting more and more of it from Kisveyad. It's being published nicely. A lot of it's out, right? Old editions, new editions. He wrote on the Mishnah. He became, they galvanized him for the Mishnayos. So Rashi on the Rif is a compound parish. Now, can you try to clarify Nuschos and Rashi on Shas from Rashi on the Rif? Maybe. People try it because there are pieces. I think it's a very risky business because how can you tell? I think it's a risky business. By the way, I forgot to mention before when I talked about that Rashi on Brachas Daf Yud Zayin. You know who has the Rashi exactly right? Exactly the original Rashi without the Im Tomar, without the Yerushalmi? The Rashi in the Ein Yaakov. Even though Ein Yaakov is a Sephardi, not a problem. I don't mean to say that with any denigration whatsoever. He had very good nuschos of Rashi, just like the Ramban on Chumash has best nuschos of Rashi. He had great nuschos. And as he had an idea, right? So if you ever wonder if Rashi that you're looking at, maybe something came in, check the, if you don't have the Kisveyat handy and you don't know how to work the Kisveyat on the website, check the, you know, digital copies, check the Ein Yaakov, it will help you.
That's what I was going to ask you. Ein Yaakov, what's the story with that? That again, it was another compilation that Rabbi Ben Chaviv put together.
Right. But he was very careful with his Rashi. By the way, apparently at some point, Tashma's written about this, they try to put a Rashi onto the Rush for the same reason, like the Rif. In other words, people were learning the Rush. It's a big Sefer. It's got a lot of, you know, again, it's really a subset of the Rif. We have evidence for Rashi on the Rush. Rashi never wrote on the Rush. The Rush is 200 years after Rashi, close to 300 years after Rashi. So it died. So again, these are artificial. So bottom line here, we have a lot of what's really Rashi. We have a very little bit of interpolation. Again, it's impossible, you know, for all of Rashi's efforts. It could be that somewhere is sitting the rest of the Masechtas. Maybe we'll find them. Again, there is the theory that he didn't write on everything, or lo hispik ligmor l'sayim. Certainly possible. But, you know, again, what we have is so much greater than what we don't have. And all of these interesting side examples that I gave, this problem, that problem, the problems are so minor that, you know, day in, day out, you don't have to sit there and worry, oh boy, is this Rashi? Now, they did have in Bar Ilan University many years ago, that's where Aaron got his start. A couple of the faculty, they wanted fellas to produce critical editions of Rashi on every Masechta. So there are doctorates on Bava Metzia, that's a big doctorate. On Brachas, that was published a little bit. Other people did other Masechtas. It fizzled. I think it may have fizzled in part because they weren't finding that many problems, but that would be a great thing to have. It would be a great, the same way it would be great to know if what we have Rashi on Chumash, exactly is it all Rashi, what came from Talmidim, what was Farbessered, who Farbessered it, when was it Farbessered, and so on and so forth. But it's not a crisis of faith.
Okay, so I think we covered a lot. I know we didn't really discuss much Rashi on Chumash and Tanakh, but that's maybe for a different podcast.
It's too much.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm just saying for the listeners. We didn't do that on purpose, and that'd be
right. It's not that we didn't want to do Tanakh. Right, we like Tanakh. We're not against it.
Okay, so mainly I would say is like this: two main questions. First of all, somebody wants to read further on this. I want to own research. What are some good books to read? Obviously, in English, you have Avram Grossman's that terrific book. Talk about it. What else is in English? And then what about in Hebrew? What would you suggest they start?
So really, I mean, if somebody reads Hebrew, Grossman's Chachmei Tzarfat HaRishonim is terrific just for your dias. And again, Grossman's Hebrew, if I may say, a lot of it's Psukim and data, so it's not, you know, 17 pages of narrative, you know, some highfalutin ideas where you won't follow it. He breaks everything down. His Inyanim Svarim on Rashi are good too, you know, the Deos of Rashi, but it's more than 100 pages, that chapter. It's a great chapter. By the way, if somebody wants to read about Rashi on Chumash, if they read Hebrew, Poznansky is still terrific, but there are other things. There are fancier things. But Poznansky's Mavoa Chachmei Tzarfat Mefarshei HaMikra is still terrific. In English, there's not so much to read, but let's think what we can give people to read in English. There must be something.
Grossman's book published by Litman, Rashi.
Yeah. That's the best thing. That's also the best thing in English. Right. Okay. That'll save us. Yeah. No, there are older books that are interesting. There's a fellow, Gellis, who actually wrote on Rashi in English, G-E-L-L-E-S. And he tries to play with the order of the, he has like an appendix. Again, it doesn't go too far, but you know, there are things, but I'm trying to think what else. You know, I can point you to stuff that I've written in English, but there, you know, there's maybe Grossman is the best bet.
Rashi on Chumash, perhaps, there's in English. I know Eric Lowy's new book on Rashi.
Right, Eric Lowy. Well, Eric Lowy's new book is more on Perushim on Rashi, but you can still learn a lot about Rashi from it. Right. There's a wonderful book by somebody named Sarah Kamin in Hebrew. That's very readable. You know, otherwise there are other books that sort of deal with Parshanut HaMikra as a whole, which have chapters on Rashi that are probably pretty good. We'll have to think some more about that. We'll have to come back with a list for people. All right.
Other books that might be easy. There's the Sefer Rashi volume by Masada Rav Kook. You can get it used maybe. And then this, and then in Hebrew, and then also in Hebrew, there's the Leopold Zunz's biography, right? The old.
Yeah. No, this Segal has, I mean, there's, you know, these are older things and, you know, the problem with Rashi is it's so multifaceted by now. You know, the best thing you can do with Rashi is read it. You know, listen, Rashi quotes a Chacham Reb Baruch in Parsha Shmos. We don't know who he is on Chumash. We don't know who he is. No idea. So we're still, and I'm telling you, as a Talmud Yudel who is busy, we still don't know. It's amazing. By the way, Rashi did not have tons or tens of Talmidim sitting in front of him. Handfuls. You know, that's what somebody said. That's how he was able to write everything. People weren't bothering him so much. They were bothering him plenty. But, you know, he didn't have, it was not a base medrash of 50 guys. It was literally a handful of mitsuyonim.
Right. Now, so finally, Balitaisis, there's all your English books that we discussed in other podcasts. But what about, just finally to tie this up, what about, is there anything to be read, especially in English, on Rashbam? If anyone wants to read on that?
So Rashbam, again, Grossman has very nice stuff in Rashbam as well, right? Certainly in Hebrew. There's a new book by a colleague at Yeshiva. Mordechai Cohen has a book in English on Parshanut, but I'm not sure. I haven't looked at it yet. It may be, I don't know if it's for beginners, but that's certainly there's some material in Rashbam. I talk about Rashbam in chapter 2 of the Intellectual History, the big book, Intellectual History of Ashkenaz Jewry. I talk about Rashbam quite a bit, actually, there. Rashbam Bechor Shor. What am I forgetting? There are others, but again, I have articles on Rashbam on multiple truths in Rashbam. What I talked about, somebody was doing a dissertation once upon a time on Rashbam's three different projects, and they somehow backed away from it. I don't know if they ever finished their doctorate, but that's worth work.
So your articles, I assume, are they on academia?
On academia.edu, I have multiple truths in Rashbam. I think also a little bit in the book, but that was an article that was published in a Ben Gurion volume. Yeah, probably if you search, you can get some material there. Yeah.
Is anything of Professor Martin Lakshin in English on Rashbam?
Oh, sure. Shachachti. The Rashbam in Hebrew is a translation of the Rashbam in English. So he wrote a couple of separate articles, but those are short articles. It's even worth reading his introductions, conclusions to his English translation, as he did a translation of Rashbam HaChumash with very good notes. I mean, it's, you know, it's somebody who's interested, it's very good. Problem is, again, and he'll give you Rashbam in the context of Rashi ben Ezra Bechor Shor. It's a little bit minutak, but he's got some interesting introductions and conclusions. It's also worth reading. Yeah, Lakshin's certainly good to read.
All right. I mean, I think this I knew this really, but I like it. Rashi, Rashbam, there's not a lot in English. It's mainly in Hebrew. I just wanted to see if there was anything. There's not much, really.
All right. No, there's not. There's not so much. It's not.
Like I said, I point everyone to Grossman's book. I think, especially for beginners, it's a terrific book to read.
Right. So, I agree. He's a Yidit Tzaddik, so it's worth reading for many reasons. Anyway,
Thank you very much, Professor Cannafogel. I hope it's very helpful and enlightening.
All right. I mean, we went on at length, but there's still, and we still didn't cover it all, but it's pretty good. Yashar Koach.